It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
We're coming up on 4 years of God Journey history.
Not coming up. We passed it. We're well into our fifth year. This is our second podcast of the fifth year. Isn't that amazing?
That's wild. I didn't think it was that long.
Time flies when you're having fun, I guess. You said you haven't slept enough. You don't have enough nights to figure up into that.
I haven't slept enough to realize the passage of 4 years. I would have guessed maybe three.
Yeah.
And you're saying we're starting our fifth.
I thought it was seven or eight, so I was surprised it was even four. Yeah. So, anyway.
Starting our eighth. All right. There you go.
We also, now it's actually starting our fifth year and actually put the fourth archive disc together. It actually only takes us through November of 2008. But now our fourth archive disc is available for those that are listening to us that way. Some of folks don't listen
so
to podcasts.
That's so wild. I got the coolest phone call just the other day. Someone was listening and kind of catching up. And they were just so overflowing with appreciation of just going like, gosh, I don't know anywhere that this stuff is getting talked about. And this feels so freeing. It wasn't bash the institution. It was just he was feeling like, finally, somebody's helping put language to my spiritual journey and what I've been struggling, and I feel just free.
I've had some wild conversations. I've done a couple of interviews for the Jake Colson book and the whole religious climate, is faith failing in America kind of thing. And one with a big religious network and then with Salem Broadcasting this morning with two guys that are, you know, jaded news guys that have heard it all. And in the middle of the conversation, they're going, this is great stuff. Where did you get? You're not just bashing on stuff, and you're not just out there saying, hey, it's the home team. We should all get together and act like it's fun. You're talking about some real stuff. And I've had some great conversations.
Nobody does that. No.
And both of them are supposed to be 10-minute interviews. They went 30, and they're going, oh, we have to. And they do it in bits. That interview's not going to play as a full interview. They pulled bits of it out for news reports. But they're just going, man, can we talk to you again? Maybe every couple of months you could come back and talk about this, because people aren't having real discussions of faith unless they're, you know, badgering. He talked about the whole Barna, Viola, kind of everything the system is doing is wrong. You're not on that page, are you? And I'm going, well, everything the system does is nuts. Everything religion does is nuts. But it really comes down to people, people who are responding in faith and love for God, whether they're in the institution, outside of it, that's what we've got to highlight. And they're going, wow, I don't get that. So it's been fun to
see. Here comes
the
missing medal.
Woo-hoo. Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah.
We got this after our last podcast on the collapsing, is Christianity collapsing, which we got some interesting feedback on. But this article I think is really, really interesting. In fact, I want to read the whole thing. It's a little short column. It's by Tom Eric, I think is how you pronounce his last name. He's an Episcopal priest in New York, so that kind of gives you where he's coming from.
Okay.
But listen to what he says. It's interesting. For five decades and in growing numbers, American Christians have been saying no to Sunday church. I think it's time we listened. That's a great lead.
Now, as an Episcopal priest, you've lost me here.
I'm telling you, yeah. We have labeled them.
We need to listen?
Listen. Yeah, well, there's the deal. We have labeled them unchurched, non-believers, former Christians, happy pagans, lost, and the mission field, and that's ripe for harvest. These negative terms imply that the absent have a flaw that needs to be addressed. New congregations have harvested some of these former mainline Protestant and Roman Catholic churchgoers, but even their numbers rise and fall, especially when the pastor slips up or retires and the overall trend in church participation remains down. Some Western states, Sunday church going has fallen below 10% of the population. We need to see these formers aren't saying no to God or to their Christian identity or to their yearning for faith. Many are simply saying no to Sunday church. They're expressing a preference for something other than getting up early on Sunday, driving across town, sitting in a pew for an hour or more, making small talk with people they don't really know, and then driving home again. Now, people accuse me of putting it in a negative light. My goodness. I haven't done that in so long, gotten dressed up on a Sunday morning.
You know, the only time that there's not traffic in L.A. is Sunday morning. That's the only time you can get on a freeway and actually get someplace fast.
I wouldn't know. I don't go out on Sunday mornings.
I just tried it a few times. It's hilarious.
Oh, well, yeah, I guess you'd have to want to go on a drive. I don't want to do that. Anyway, they are saying no to Sunday. The one day they can get a slow start in this everyone works hard era. They're saying no to being an audience in an age of participation and self-determination. They're saying no to institutional preaching, repetitive liturgies, and assemblies controlled by small cadres usually older than themselves. They're saying no to being told what to believe. They're saying no to having their questions ignored. Instead, they find spiritual enrichment on the internet and on television. I don't know where you find it on television, but that's interesting. They read faith-related books. They pray on their own. They find their own networks of faithful friends. The problem isn't their faith. The problem is Christianity's delivery system. We are stuck in trying to lure people to physical locations at a time of our choosing to do what we think they ought to do and to be loyal in paying for it. It's time we look beyond the paradigm of Sunday church. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, we've made Christianity and finding followers an issue of coming on our terms, our time, and our turf, and somehow that's the only valid thing. And it's like, you know what? I think it's about living a daily life and an actual relationship. Why limit it to just the holy hour, the holy place with the holy few?
He says we need to see that works for some doesn't work for others, not because others are flawed, nor because our culture has collapsed and turned against God, but because things change. And just as Jesus took his ministry out of the synagogue and radically rethought the meaning of the Sabbath, so God is drawing us away from former things, even ones we consider our treasure or our duty.
That's so wild. One of the things I
love that.
One of the things I was thinking about this week is, you know, so oftentimes people are, you know, who are proponents of the institution, they're sort of appealing to you, like, you know, we need to do this, we need to validate this, you know, it's like, and I'm like, look at Jesus. Was he a systems institution guy? Was he looking to try to validate everyone by saying, guys, what you really need to do is adhere to this? He was so revolutionary and counterculture to what was going on in his day. I'm just going, like, how could you be, quote, a follower of Christ and not see that? He stood in stark contrast to the religious system of his day. And you're just going, like, I don't think it's about that.
Yeah, because that was Judaism. This is Christianity. So this is the religious system want to infect people with. That's how people think of it. When I used to read Galatians, I used to say the problem here is Judaism. We got the Judaizers. No, the problem in Galatia was you traded life in Christ
for a system.
For religious rules and principles and creeds and codes and doctrines and systems. Yeah, that's the problem. But we don't see it when it's Christianity. We only see it when it's Judaism or Islam or some other religious system.
We don't, because I do.
I do too now. And it's a wonderful thing to wake up to.
But I don't know what it was that was causing me to think about it, but so oftentimes the appeal was, you know what, Brad, you just got to kind of fall in line. You got to kind of stack yourself up. Everyone's in this. And I'm just going, like, gosh, our one model, if there was a model, our one model, the guy to follow, the paradigm to look at, would actually be someone who's never made an appeal based upon that. He was never making an appeal like, you know what, you just got to park your questions, park your issues, get in line and follow suit. Got to do this. And he's going, gosh, if Jesus never made that appeal, why is that what we are given so often?
2,000 years of history. It's folded into a reality that is no longer a reality. That an Episcopal priest can say, people are saying no to Sundays, and it's cool. I have no doubt somewhere behind this they're scheming a way to make Sundays more cool or to, you know, have more things during the week people can come to at various times. I'm sure there's a plan behind all that.
I don't think there's anything wrong with an event that you make cool that people can have. Sell tickets, do whatever. At least treat it as what it is. It's an event that's shared, made it cool.
And it might be an event with wonderful people.
Yeah.
Or it might be a terribly boring event we're doing over and over again. I didn't think about that. We were watching old Cosby reruns, the old Cosby show, which was It was in its prime when Sarah and I were a young married couple, so we watched it quite a bit. We were watching an old rerun, just having a laugh at it, going, you know, even that, probably one of the best comedy shows ever made, ever done, couldn't sustain itself every week forever.
Right.
It had its season. It had its deal where it was funny and the right people were together and it worked. And then it didn't work. And so things go on. I don't think the comedies today are any better. I don't think there's a comedy out there I enjoy watching
just
these
racier
days. But I just, you know, we got the same little environment we've been doing for 2,000 years. We keep switching the actors, but it's the same play.
Bless their hearts.
Bless their pee pick. And I had one of the interviewers yesterday, the guy from the Religious News Service, he asked me, he said, well, don't you think believers have an obligation to go?
No.
And I said, here's what I'm going to get behind your question. If you've reduced, quote unquote, church to an obligation, what you're already saying is there's nothing worth coming for. So you just got to come because you're supposed to. That's what you're saying. There's not life here that's irresistible. There's an obligation you have as a Christian to sit in your tail in a pew Saturday or Sunday morning at 10 o'clock to validate your faith. And people are just, I mean, that was uncritically accepted 20 years ago. People didn't even question it. I know when I first started on this journey and started writing things, people were going, what? You know, what? Now, it's not all that radically, it's not that radical a thought to say, you know, Sunday morning is not our obligation. Our joy is you get to have a relationship with Jesus. And then in that relationship with Jesus, you're going to find brothers and sisters on a similar journey to you, and you're going to have fun hanging out with them, talking, discovering, growing together. And you don't have to ever, you can if you want to, make an event out of it, but you don't have to. You can let it be life and relationship and family.
If any of this stuff ever devolves into an obligation, I think you really have lost the love and the life of what it is. I think sirens ought to go off.
Exactly. Disneyland doesn't say, listen, you all need to go to Disneyland.
You just need to do this.
Once or twice a year. It's your obligation to the economy of Los Angeles. I'm saying that because my wife and daughter and granddaughters are down at Disneyland today.
They're obligated.
And I'm so thankful. No, they're not going for – they pay for this privilege. They're willing to write that, you know, they've got their season passes, and they go down there, oh, once every month or 6 weeks because they really enjoy it. It's fun for them. It's not fun for me. I hate that place.
My basic premise is at the end of the day, people do what they want to do. For whatever reason.
That's called sin, though. You can't let people do that.
No.
Yes, you can't. Don't indulge in me. I just want to do whatever I want to do.
Whether it's holy acts of righteousness or depraved debauchery, the reality
is... quite a spectrum.
Yes, I know.
Wow.
The entire thing... behind it is a volitional choice that people are doing what they want to do. Do you want to be motivated because of the positive want to? Or am I going to respond to the fear, guilt, whatever of, I better.
But isn't all of religion not doing what you want, laying down your life, and doing everything ugly and disgusting you don't want to do? That's how
religion might be that, but I'm not doing that.
No, I hear you, but it pitches itself that way. That's what I grew up with. Look, if this is what you want to do,
it might be wrong.
God probably wants you to do the opposite of that.
See, I am so in a different space. That might have been true, and I could put on my whole religious, you know, garb and mindset. But the reality is I don't see Jesus saying any of that. I see him saying, hey, come follow me. I basically see an attraction. What in the world walked down the street that he could look at a tax collector guy and say, Matthew, you, follow me. And that dude gets up and goes. I think those are some of the greatest miracles ever, but you don't hear him couch that way. I'm just going like, what happened there? And why have we lost touch with any of that? I got to think, Jesus... and being a follower, a disciple, when it could cost you your life and people are going like, oh, fine. There must have been something so fantastic in that that it made it a no-brainer for those people. That ought to captivate us today.
Well, even Jesus talked about the kingdom being this pearl of great price, that a guy finds it in the field.
I'm going to go buy the whole field.
And he goes, sells everything that he has. This is not, I'm selling everything that I have because I have to for Jesus. This is a guy who sees something so valuable that it's worth doing. It's worth selling everything you have to come and buy the field to have the treasure. Jesus talked about the kingdom that way. When you get what God is offering you in the Son, this is where religion totally loses me now.
It can't hold a candle to that.
Whenever you start talking obligate, it is your responsibility to come here and die with the rest of us. I just go, who are you talking to? We have lost the essence of the kingdom and the relationship if we've reduced our faith to an obligation instead of being stimulated by the passion that God offers us his life, the life of the Creator inside the creation. How can you get a better offer than that? This is not, oh, we're sacrificing horrible things for the kingdom. No, we're not. We're getting to give up our trash to receive treasure. And that's the invitation. And I think religion's just lost it. We've totally missed it. We pretend it's a treasure, but it's boring. It's tradition. It's what the French mean by boring. All that stuff. Oh, my gosh.
Well, the reality is when you're doing it, quote, out of obligation because it's the I want to, I don't know about you, but the way my heart functions, when Jesus is its preeminent focus, I got a whole bunch of want-tos that are in line with his. I want to do those things. I'm not even those hard things that, you know, part of me is like, gee, forgiving that guy who did that, I don't want to do it. When Jesus is my focus, I find those things a whole lot easier to do. I'm not gritting my teeth. I'm going like, wow, God, you've conquered and accomplished something inside here that has shifted. I didn't want to do that. Now with you there square, I do.
Yeah, even the things like when you're doing, like Paul talks about, when you're doing the dumb stuff you don't want to do, the fleshy, sinful, indulgent stuff, even then you're going, I don't even want to do the bad stuff I'm doing.
Yeah.
It's the good that I want to do. I really want to live inside the full reality of who he is and what he's offering me.
See, I think that's the tractor beam of his reality because he does become an irresistible force. When you see the beauty of who Jesus is, that captures the human heart. It starts to change me. Against me.
Yes.
I might have been totally happy doing my whole little deal over here, but you all of a sudden I got him in my sights and I start to shift.
Zhook.
Yeah, I was doing the motorized.
Zhook. No one saw the movement. They just heard the
zhook. I did. We should have a video cast or whatever.
And with that, I think community becomes irresistible. I see that all the time. I get people who feel like they're living it alone. No one around them is really kind of sustaining their kind of out-of-the-box kind of thinking. And then I'll show up in a town where, you know, 50 of those come together for a weekend. And the connections that happen between total strangers within 25, 30 minutes is incredible. I mean, real fellowship, talking about real things in the kingdom, and people getting to meet each other at not that we're pretending to be what we're not because we're doing obligations instead of living life, that's just fun.
Because it's centered on his life. When his life is the center of that, look, you're a charismatic guy, okay? You could, you know, I'm pointing to you and you'd turn around.
I did.
You're a charismatic guy. People would have some measure of attraction to Wayne. But
I don't want that getting out.
I know. But the reality is that will run its course. When the center of attraction is his life and community, as I think we're meant to see it, is sharing his life.
Yeah.
That is that irresistible force. You want to be a part of it. You don't have to prop that up. There isn't that awkward moment of silence. There's just the fact that, you know what? We get to share his life. You're drawn into that, and the focus isn't on us. There's no performing there. That's what makes it so life-giving.
Case in point.
You got something hot off the press.
Man, I love this letter. I got this letter from a lady in South Africa a couple of days ago, and she's describing her own transition. And she's coming to the gratefully part of being disillusioned. And you just got to hear this. She said, I was asking myself the other day, why my life has changed so much over the past few years? She said, I believe, and she said, this is what I believe God wants me to understand. Transition is like this. When I was a little girl, my parents told me, don't do this and don't do that, and so on, just like church. Then one day I grew up and I became aware of them, my parents. My perception changed. I no longer accepted everything they said. I started to question everything. I was asking them, how do you know that? Or how did you find that out? Or why is it like this? I never stopped loving them. In fact, this is when real relationship between me and my parents started. I just grew up, like all of us do. Now, here's the spiritual transition. When God reveals himself to us, we're like infants. We say yes and amen to every law, and we become aware of him. We start to question the laws, and then we encounter reality and truth for what it really is. When you are an infant, you cannot see or understand reality. That's really a good statement. It is only when the reality of truth, capital T, awakens that we encounter relationship. And yes, I keep on loving my father, even though I don't understand certain things. But here's something else I want to mention, a transition. And there may be more, but see point 11. So she talks about the transition. They're like, first, I was abiding by the law, doing do's and don'ts. And then in the beginning of my journey, when relationship started, I was a stranger to reality. It was lonely. I felt as if I hadn't arrived, somewhat confused, and realized I was not in a relationship at all when I was bounded by the law. I then embraced my new freedom, but sometimes way too fast. Everything became worse before it became better. I also stopped reading my Bible. And then my relationship with Father grew and became stronger. And then I followed, related to him for the first time. And then I found myself asking him what it is that he wants in my life, and his presence became a reality for me. Then the transition took on an unfamiliar turn. God was with me. Everything I did, I was aware of him. Expanding conversations, endless times together. And I found myself reading the Bible and enjoying it. And then another thing became a reality. When a situation arose, I would actually ask him in my mind, how do you want me to react? What do you want me to do here? As if I was now also not bounded by space and time. The me in me never allowed this before, and I always reacted. But here's the actual point I want to discuss. The next experience is what I'm experiencing now. It is the most mind-boggling ever. And I cannot think that Father will ever stop expanding and growing us. But here's what's happening now. I now look back a few days or weeks and find that I was a good, kind, patient, loving person without me planning to be that person. I never consciously decided that today I'm going to go and bless someone. I never consciously decided that now I want to be kind to this person. I have lost the trying and the doing of things I wanted. When I look back, I just see that I automatically was. It's as if life is now unfolding without me being an active actor. Don't you love that statement?
That's very good.
I am now a spectator of what I perceive as the Spirit of God living through me. When I look back, I catch myself out that I did things that I would never have done in 1,000 years. It's no longer me. I am no longer who I was. Life is very enjoyable now, and it's a great gift. Even though I'm excited about what God will do next, somehow I know I will not know of it, or when he changes or does something, I'll just become aware one day. Life really is like a box of chocolates. Each one is a stunning surprise. Fantastic. Gosh, I love that letter for a lot of reasons. One of the things I really love about it is that we get to see a transition over time in someone's life. We're so focused on the moment. She's not reading the Bible anymore. She's taking advantage of her freedom. I mean, all of those were parts of her journey that people on the outside are going to say, you got to stop that, man. You're really screwing things up and you're ruining things. And she's just saying, here's where Father took me on a journey. I lost some stuff. I overindulged my freedom at a time because I was learning to be free of the rules. And then God broke into my life. And now something's real. Now I just love that whole process when you lose sight of what I'm trying to be for God and just live in that reality in a daily way.
Yeah, if it's anchored and if it's focused in the whole dynamic of, hey, you know what? Jesus is a real person with whom I want to have an actual, not a pretend, not a hope to one day, an actual relationship. All the trying, all the work, all the doing really gives way to, is that real? And he is real. And there is something that comes from him that does change me without all of my self-discipline trying to do it for him. And I find that it's those changes that are actually more permanent, the ones that actually stick. A righteous habit is formed because the righteous one is invading my space.
And I think that is so powerful in touching other people. People know when you're doing something for them because you're on a mission or it's an act of obedience.
Yeah.
The most powerful way Sarah and I have engaged people in this last 10-year bit of our journey has been the ones we're not aware of. We're not aware of ourselves in it. And like, we're trying to do something to win these people.
You're not an active actor.
I know. We're just hanging out with people. We had our Mormon neighbor friends. We moved away from this Mormon bishop and his wife. And we've missed them. We've missed the relationship. So we had them over for dinner and they came over the night with their kids. And we're sitting around having the most incredible time. And we're talking about Jesus and we're talking about praying for each other and we're talking about what's going on in our lives. And none of us are mentioned the Mormon versus Christian deal. We're not even talking about it. We're just talking about who God is, what's going on in your life. I'll be praying for you. I'm going, when they left, Sarah, that was fun. We weren't trying to be anything.
Right.
We weren't trying to win them. We genuinely enjoy these people and their family. We enjoy being with them. Whatever God does out of the friendship, we're happy to be God, to have God do.
If it's not my job to win people, but I do recognize that the Holy Spirit is profoundly capable of doing that, then in the genuineness of my just loving them, I think that's the most powerful testimony that the Holy Spirit can use for reality. Because I'm not trying to do this. I'm not going to be a better person because I got these notches on my belt. But so much of that mentality has been what is thrust upon us. You need to go out and do this. You need to be. And it's like, you know what? If that life is real inside you, you can't stop those people.
And I like what she says. When you turn something into an obligation, you take the relationship out of it.
Yeah.
I think that's profound because I see that if you're doing something because God told you to be loving to a certain person in a certain way, that takes the relationship out of them just being people. And
you can do that without him.
Exactly. But what grows the relationship? And where religion has robbed us more than any other place is it has made an obligation what can be a joy, what can be the fullness of life expressing itself in the community of believers is now an obligation everybody goes to. And one of the interviewers the other day said, now, why'd you call your book, Why Don't Want to Go to Church Anymore? I said, because people resonate with the title. Who doesn't? Even those who like going oftentimes pull into the parking lot. I remember as a pastor being the one speaking, I parked my car and
I wasn't speaking. I wouldn't be.
Even when I was, no, I wasn't thinking that. What I was thinking was, I'll be glad when this is over. This is supposed to be the pinnacle point of my week, and I haven't even parked the car yet. And I'm thinking, be glad when this is over, going home, we're having X for lunch, we'll turn on the football game, the afternoon's going to be great. That's what I'm thinking. Not because I didn't love those people, I did. Not because I didn't enjoy teaching, I enjoy teaching. But because making something an obligation and not the free will, not the free choice to go do and participate as God leads me to, ruins everything.
For everybody.
Yes.
For both sides of that equation. There's nobody that gets blessed in that exchange.
But they think they do. I mean, I know when I was meeting the obligation, there is the validation that came from saying, I'm doing this.
The self-validation. And how does that not grow itself into pride?
Particularly, we had the Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. Then you could
did triple header.
By making all three, you were a better Christian than the people who only made one or two of the others.
Right.
And then if you went to the 6 a.m. men's prayer time on Thursday.
Oh, dude, you're glowing.
And there's three people there. But you are the best three people in the body. You're most committed. And there is a hit from that I don't think we can diminish. There is. It's false. It's totally false.
No, it's a religious validation addiction. It's a powerful one.
It is, but it doesn't build relationship. It doesn't build it with you and God. And it doesn't build it with you and the three people in the prayer room or the 2,000 people on Sunday morning.
No, but if you take enough puffs on that cigar, pretty soon you are God. And you're validating your own opinions because they're obviously I'm speaking for him.
Yeah.
And you do look at the delusion that goes on in the whole self-validation process. That's where you can get to the whole Pharisee realm of looking down your little nose. God, thank you that I.
Of course you get there.
Here's one guy standing to his left that the Pharisees despising. He's having an honest, genuine moment of.
Yeah, can't have that here.
Yeah. I don't really feel like this is work. I'm a mess. And the Pharisees, I'm glad I'm not like that mess. And you just go like, how deluded is that?
Yeah, the guy's going, I'm unworthy. And the pastor and the Pharisees
are
going,
yeah.
Yeah, glad I'm not you, maggot. It's disgusting. I lived that attitude. I did. Oh, God. But I love this. For people who listen to this podcast, and, you know, even we talk about living in the freedom of that and God opening up opportunities and you're just living without thinking and loving, see it in this larger process. You may be up in this point of just stepping free of the do's and don'ts. That might be where you are in this, and none of this other stuff is real for you yet. Follow the process. I think religion so focuses on a perfect product. It doesn't allow us just to enjoy the process. God is changing you. Learn to live freedom. Are you going to mess it up? Are you going to abuse it? Yeah, you probably will. We all did. But learning to get through that and finding a greater reality in who God is then what allows this transformation to happen.
And you know what? As opposed to making it some, you know, big, huge hurdle for somebody, just pick one person today and be genuinely interested in that person from a standpoint of listening so as to respond, is there anything there? I'll guarantee you the experience that happens will awaken something totally different, because it's not like a, I have to. It's not like a, oh, you know, it's you'll start responding to reality. That is the primer for how to do this with God.
Yeah, we had an experience like that yesterday. Somebody sent us a resume. They wanted to know if we had any job openings at Windblow Media. We're like, no, not at the moment. But I somehow, reading her email, whatever, I felt like, I think God wants us to be with her. So I went down and talked to Sarah, and I said, yeah, I think we don't have a job. I told her we didn't have a job, but we want to meet her. She came over yesterday afternoon for an hour and a half or so with Sarah and I. And I've got a busy day. I don't have hours and a half just to give away. But somehow there was this little inkling that this was important. It was important to God, and thus it became important to us. And we had the most incredible conversation with a sister on a journey at a broken place in her life. It's one of those things that we don't know each other at all, but we're sharing honestly some of the joys and challenges in our life. Got a chance to be with her in some of the disillusioning places she's in right now. All out of just something I could have easily blown off. I don't have time to meet with everybody who wants a job at Windblow, and I don't. But when there's this,
but you were
nudging your heart.
You went active in that moment. I know God inhabits those moments, and they're not holy because of some righteous act. It's He's present, and that becomes real and life-giving. Even hard moments can have that element where it's like, wow, I'm living life with God right now in this hard moment. And there's something that's real about it that honestly is that sense of transcendent where you're just going like, you know what? This isn't as painful as trying to do it without Him.
That's where this gets scary for me. Because I used to read all those and teach those passages from the New Testament about consider it all joy when suffering sets in. Or as long as you're in the world, you'll know bone-crushing trouble. And, you know, every book in the New Testament just says, hey, suffering won't kill you. It'll make you better. And I used to read those guys. Okay, this is the attitude we should have in our moments of suffering.
It doesn't work because you don't have it.
Acting like it. Well, we act like it. Now, I'm actually there. I'm going through some difficult things in my life right now. And I look at it. I don't like being in it. I wish it were gone. I wish it weren't there. But I know God's changing something in me in the going through it.
Yeah.
And so there really is hope in even those difficult things. So now I'm seeing that scripture as being true, not because I'm trying to pretend it's true.
Or you've achieved something religiously.
No, but because
it just is.
In fact, it is. God does His best work at times when I'm driven to my extremities. It just does. And He doesn't do His best work when I'm just having fun skipping and dancing down the road. So it's okay. I don't volunteer for hurt. I haven't signed up for any new pain that I know of. But when I'm in the middle of it, I'm going, okay, God's in this too. That's what you're saying?
Yeah, I think the whole reality of this is, you know what, life that is lived separate from Him is the wages of sin stuff. The wages of sin is death. That's separate from God. I don't want a life that's separate from God. He didn't promise me a nice, you know, they're all a bunch of rose petals, and you're walking on that path. It's just fun. No, He promised He would never leave us. So if that's true, in Greek it's the triple negative.
Wow, that's serious.
Okay, if that's true, the only thing that's required is for me to awaken to the fact that he's here too, right now. And that honestly changes everything for me. Good moments and bad moments are shared life with him. And I got to tell you, I take something away from that all the time. And that's what we're called unto, is to have a genuine life that's lived with him. It says that he who is joined to the Lord is one spirit with him. I can't get my brain around that other than I know that's good.
Oh, yeah. I've lost the trying and the doing of things I wanted. And now I look back and see God changing me. It was as if life is now unfolding without me being an active actor. That's great language.
It is.
Thank you for traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.